We are blessed with music, huh? Really impressive. So today, I can't before I start for today because I've already started for today, so there you go. What I want to say right off the bat is that yesterday I came to this church and I wandered around and I was in awe to see a harvest fair that, you know, when you think harvest fair, you think, okay, a nice little thing, you know, da-da-da-da-da. But this was like amazing. I mean, unbelievable, a kind of amazing. And it made me think of a hive of honeybees. That was the image I had in my head because that's what it seemed like. It was like all of you sort of working in unison to make things happen. And it just made me so proud, even though I had nothing to do with it. You know what I mean? It's like, these are my people, and they're really amazing. So I just wanted to say thank you for all the people that worked so hard yesterday, and just to say, well done, well done. Okay. This morning, and actually for a long time, I've been wondering about this idea of interconnectivity, this independent web of all existence of which we are a part, our seventh UU principle. And then, you know, I've been thinking a lot about sacred geometry in the last couple of years, and I'm just going to say this to you now, fasten your seatbelts. Because I'm going to take us from ground zero to another plane, and hopefully you'll all be with me, but I do have diagrams. And I'm not even kidding about that. Because here's something about sacred geometry. You just can't hear about it. You've got to experience it. And so when Roberta said to me that she was going to try to speak about this, I thought, good, you have diagrams and images, because it really is important too. So I'm going to just hand these out and let you just sort of hold on to them and pass them around to each other. And just think about each image as I speak. Before I really begin, and I keep doing that this morning, I heard the rumor that Katie Lee, as well as Deborah Pope Lance, are both adopted. Am I right about this? Okay, so am I. What does that say about us? There's something about being adopted that I find incredibly intriguing. I do not know where I hail from. I have no idea. But here's the thing about that. One can think that not having this type of history or biological root would make one feel less than. But honestly, I don't feel that way about it. I love the fact that I don't know because it gives me every opportunity in the world to imagine anything I want. Like, I could be royalty. Sure, why not? It could happen. There's a lot of different things that could happen. I could be Native American or Irish or Jewish or some combination of a European Heinz 57, which I think is probably more accurate. And to tell you the truth, I've never really had the desire to search for my biological parents. I never had. Because I'd had the greatest adoptive parents anybody could have. They were a handful as well. But what I did want to know about was my health. My history of my health, my ancestors, and what nationality I might be, because I kind of wanted to have that nationality pride sort of thing. Don't ask me why. My adoptive mother, Catherine Maddie, or Kiki as my cousin Murph used to call her, also speculated that I was Irish and Italian, and that's what she was certain of. She said, this is what you are. Don't even question it. You are. And, you know, it probably makes sense because my mother was Irish, and I loved pasta and cannolis, and I have this olive skin, so she thought, Italian for sure. So Irish and Italian stuck. So for the first 50 years of my life, I've been Irish and, well, probably Italian. But with the advancements of DNA research, and specifically ancestry, I became curious. And so 2 years ago, I swabbed my inner cheek, sent that sample out to a DNA laboratory, which specifically focuses on ancestry. And what I received back absolutely astonished me. I am 94% Orcadian and 6% Middle Eastern. Who would have thunk it? I'm from the Orkney Islands. So I'm pretty much Scottish, maybe a little Viking, who knows? I definitely am a conqueror, that's for sure. If I were you, I'd be sitting there looking at these images going, what the heck does this have to do with DNA and sacred geometry? But here's the thing. All of the answers that I seek are literally locked in that elegant little double helix. The DNA molecule is pretty stellar. It's a pretty stellar example of the perfect mathematical equation. The cell containing the mitochondrial DNA is the biological building blocks of every living thing that we know about in our cosmos, the body, human or otherwise. A fun fact for you to contemplate as you're looking at those images is that DNA has been found in meteorites since they began studying meteorites in 1960. So here's the gig. They think meteorites brought DNA to the planet Earth. DNA gives the body structure and form. When I think of structure and form, I think of sacred geometry as the language with which we can quantify the mystery that is life. So in some sense, that's how I think of it. Sacred geometry holds the form of life. And honestly, it all begins with a circle. So some of you who have these already, or have looked at these, have a circle. And you'll see that there's like pi, and you'll actually see diameter, radius, so it's mathematical in nature. That shape, a circle, has no beginning or end. The circle, per physics, is the most perfect symmetrical shape. This morning, Roberta shared some of those images from sacred geometry, and you will see on the front cover of the Order of Worship, I have included the seed of life, which is kind of exploded in a bit, just to make it more interesting and such. The flower of life, which I'm going to pass around as well, which you've already seen, is the one that has a lot of circles. Here it is. This is the actual flower of life expanded, okay? For those who haven't seen it yet, I don't know if you can see it now, but this piece of paper does represent it. So that flower of life is pretty important because it actually is a symbol that incorporates all of the proportions of mathematics as well as music within it. Some would say that it has all of the data of creation itself within it. Why is this important to think about on a Sunday morning? Because I believe that our world is seen in the reflection between that of the microcosm and macrocosm. So what I would say is that the structure that we see in a flower, we can also see on a much larger scale in the universe. I wouldn't be the only person or religion or society that has actually believed that, okay? The symbolic image of the flower of life can be seen in many of the ancient civilizations: Egypt, Israel, Ireland, Turkey, China, Greece, Germany, India, Iceland, England, Tibet, Japan, Sweden, Lapland, the Yucatan, and many other locations. It's been seen everywhere. And the interesting thing about this pattern is that it is called the same thing no matter where it is in the world: the flower of life. What are the chances of that happening? What are the chances? If we removed some of the circles from the flower of life, we can see different geometric patterns emerge, such as the seed of life. Okay? It all started with one circle. Now, if we think about that, the basic building block is the circle. Block, circle, block, circle. It's a little confusing. Stick with me. The circle is a Platonic solid. Leonardo da Vinci, which I stuck this familiar image in there, which we've all seen at some point or another in school or art class or whichever, uses the male form to actually exemplify the perfect proportions of the universe. Okay? So he's saying that we, as human beings, are directly proportional to a circle, and the circle to us. Well, here's the thing. It's hard to visualize all this stuff. And so what you're looking at is stuff that you can also look at on the internet. You can just Google this stuff, you can find images, but it's pretty fascinating. If we take that big flower of life, right, this is the expanded flower of life, and actually at one point in history, the outer ring wasn't shown. There was a big sort of frame around it. And the reason why they did that is because they wanted you not to see that expanded flower of life. They think they could, you know, control the human brain in such a way that you wouldn't think beyond that flower of life. But people got beyond it, like Da Vinci. If we reduce that flower of life down to 8 circles, what we will have is what is known as the egg of life. The egg of life actually looks like an 8-patterned, there it is, block, a cube, 3-dimensionally. But the interesting thing about it is that an 8-celled embryo looks identical. Well, we only saw this with the use of an electron microscope. And yet the Egyptians believed there was such a thing called the egg of life, right? So historically, we've had these images that we've built upon and actually uncovered through science. If we take that egg of life and we remove 6 of those fabulous little circles, what we'll be left with is a vesica Pisces, which is considered to be a very sacred image indeed. And the reason why it's so sacred is because it is just 2 circles, and yet the 2 circles together create this very interesting center intersecting image. Now, the thing about this is that is probably considered in Christianity to be one of the most sacred symbols of all time. Okay, it's shown around lots of different art images from the Catholic religion. You will see them. You'll see a vesica Pisces as a little sort of frame around pictures of Jesus or Mary or, you know, Jesus as a child. But here's the thing. The ancient Egyptians practiced this sacred geometry based on this shape. Architects and artists copied the solar eclipse, which is actually what it looks like, the vesica Pisces, and its mathematics into their sacred buildings, artwork to reflect their religious beliefs. The ancient tradition was passed on through the centuries by the Freemasons. So expanding on the secret knowledge of the Freemasons, many whom were universalist, might I add, George Oliver in Masonic Literature explains that the vesica is a universal exponent of architecture or masonry, and the original source or fountain from which its signs and symbols are derived. It constituted the great and enduring secret of our ancient brethren, says he. In his Prestonian lecture in 1931, noted Masonic historian W.W. Covey Crump calls this statement quite right and expresses that the vesica Pisces had, even from the time of the primitive Christians, possessed a sacred symbolic significance, though the purport of that significance was variously interpreted owing to the secrecy of its transmission. So what they're trying to say is this thing, uber important, but that it's not the only thing that's important. And what I believe the Masons have been trying to hide for centuries has been this knowledge right here. Is anybody a Mason in here? Because I was going to make you verify. Am I close to being right at all? He's not going to tell. I know. It's a secret society. Can't say. Anyways, I thought I was going to get an answer, but that's right. Going back to the seed of life. We can also see another familiar belief system emerge. And what emerges in Judaism from this image is the Kabbalah. And what happens is basically you take the circles and you intersect the circles with lines, and then you start to get some very interesting sacred geometry. So with that in mind, the Kabbalah seeks to define the nature of the universe and the human being, the nature and purpose of existence, and various other ontological questions. It also presents methods to aid understanding of these concepts and thereby attain spiritual realization or enlightenment. So they're saying that through this, you get to the Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah is basically a ladder with 3 branches to climb to reach enlightenment. The tree of life, which is the Kabbalah, in the Jewish religion was found carved on pillars in Egypt over 5,000 years ago. None of these sacred symbols, none of them, are associated with any one religion or culture, but can be found in some form or other in many religions and many cultures. Okay? With that in mind, let's take that Vesica Pisces. Anybody know what that symbol is? It's the fish. It's the Christian fish. It's a covalent bond. When we look at this, what the Christians see is the Christian fish, what is thought to signify a miracle that Jesus performed with the fishes and the loaves. It's actually shorthand for the Vesica Pisces. Any of this going, oh, interesting. It's kind of cool. Now, let's go back to the Christian and the Jewish faith for a second and think about the fact that the first chapter and verses of Genesis are actually a description of the circles that are required to create the seed of life, which is also known as the Genesis pattern. So let's just think of just two of those first verses, or three. In the beginning, God created the heaven and earth. And in some sense, they believe that in science, that there would be a void. That was the universe. And the only way that spirit or entity or anything could act is if there was something to act upon it. And so that would be that first circle. And then the second verse goes on to say, and the earth was without form and void, and the darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, moved to create the second circle. And hence, third verse, and God said, let there be light, and there was light, and the creation of the Vesica Pisces. So in some sense, there are people out here who believe that there is direct correlation to some of these, or not correlation, but reference to these symbolic symbols. As we draw more symbols and we expand out from the seed of life to the flower of life, going one step beyond the flower of life, we reveal what is known as the fruit of life. This pattern of fruit of life has apparently been hidden for centuries because of the sacredness and the knowledge held within it. If we were to draw a line from the center of one circle to the center of every other circle, much is revealed in the form of the platonic solids contained within the fruit of life. So as you draw in this one symbol, it all becomes clear. We start to see all the three-dimensional symbols, such as the star tetrahedron, or the Star of David, but in three dimensions. The hexahedron, a cube, the octahedron, dodecahedron, and the icosahedron. These platonic solids correlate directly with the periodic table of elements, thus defining all known matter. Aristotle once shared that the Pythagoreans were the first to take up mathematics, not only advanced this subject, but saturated with it, fancied that the principles of mathematics were the principles of all things. Interesting how we come around again. Pythagoras, a legend who founded his own religion based on this premise, and who many would have said was a scientist as well as a philosopher, shared that there is geometry in the humming of the strings, there is music in the spacing of the spheres. Humankind has come a long way in providing and proving that this is true. Thinking about this month's theme of the interdependent web, I would be hard-pressed not to share the idea of how a simple circle can expand out to describe the symbolic nature of the mystery of life. If we think about this idea of interconnectivity and how what I do affects you and vice versa, we can see how sacred geometry can expand into infinity, revealing how the proportions in a basic circle can define all of the known universe. I chose to share these sacred geometry images with you this morning because it's one piece of a larger puzzle that reveals how all beings are interconnected and how religion has attempted to define the phenomenon of creation via metaphor and symbology. The transition from religion to science in large measure comes with humankind's ability to think abstractly and then critically, having faith, certain faith, in the practice of mathematics and physics to further realize and understand our physical reality. Okay? So what I realized with regard to my own personal physical reality after having my DNA mapped is that I have a sense of place that I have never had before. And I also have a people that I can claim to be mine, directly connected by DNA to me. And just like those first two circles, when overlapped, created a place of light known as the Vesica Pisces, symbolic of the mystery of creation, they may also represent those two now famous proton streams hurled at each other around a 17-mile circle tunnel known as the Hadron Collider at CERN that uncovered the Higgs boson this year, the God particle, which most scientists are like, oh, don't call it that. The Higgs boson has been described as a spark, and this was by, actually, someone in that arena in physics. He described it as a spark that lit the fuse of the Big Bang. And in looking at some of the videos of what they're trying to explain about the Higgs boson, is that these two proton streams are literally sent around this huge 17-mile circle to collide. And then they've got all of these cameras that are taking like 40 million photographs per second. And it's capturing what the protons are coming through and exploding into. And that field is what is the Higgs boson. And I think of it as potentiality. When we think about that, and we think about CERN and the Big Bang, what they actually were trying to create inside that collider was a Big Bang, but at the smallest possible level. And they believe that they have done it. They have seen creation and lived to tell about it. In a TED talk about the Higgs boson, Kyle Cranmer, a physics professor at NYU and leader in the search for the particle, explained that all of nature is remarkably symmetrical. He showed this with the example of a snowflake. He explained that the smaller the particles are, the more symmetrical they become. It stands to reason, if we think about microcosms in relation to macrocosms, the smaller and tighter that molecules are arranged, the more symmetrical, and the farther and more spread out they become, the more asymmetrical and diverse they become. Are you with me so far? Okay. With regard to this expansion theory, I've seen something similar in studying my DNA over the last 2 years. There are many what they call hits that point me to others who have similarities in our genetic makeup. We affectionately call each other our second and third distant cousins. There's actually a migration map that has mitochondrial Eve living somewhere in East Asia, or Africa, sorry. She is the matrilineal, most recent common ancestor of all currently living anatomically modern humans, who is estimated to have lived approximately 140,000 to 200,000 years ago. This is the most recent woman from whom all living humans today descend. One woman on their mother's side. And through the mothers of these mothers and so on back until all the lines converge on one person. Mitochondrial Eve is named after the mitochondria and the biblical Eve. Unlike her biblical namesake, she was not the only human female of her time. However, her female contemporaries, except her mother, failed to produce a direct, unbroken female line to any living woman in present day. That is actually mind-boggling if you think about it, that we're all truly connected. That at one point, we were far more similar probably than we are today, because our ancestors migrated, kind of like that Big Bang, and spread out, introducing diversity. But ultimately, our ancestors were all part of one tribe and one family. I personally believe that that is what religion, sacred geometry, and science has been trying to prove and teach us for millennia. You and I, we all descend from the same stuff, whether we accept that to be meteorites, the Higgs boson, or the mitochondrial Eve. The question for us today, knowing all of this, having an inkling of what this all means, is what are we going to do with that knowledge once we own it, once it's ours? And what I would say, as I pull out this fancy dancy necklace that Roberta made for me, is that we start with a circle, but our possibilities are infinite.
May it be so. Blessed be. Amen.